Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Public Finance Advisory Committee meeting of May 10th. Welcome, I'm Tom Hammond. I'll call this meeting to order. And the first item on our agenda today is the approval of the March 8th, 2012 meeting. Do we have comments or corrections from any of the members? Anybody? Oh, Shari, go ahead, please.
Chair Hammond, I just have one small, under three, actually, the second paragraph. I move to approve the minutes. I think I should have said as amended because the minutes were amended. So if we could just add as amended there, that would be great. And that's my only comment on the minutes. Thank you.
Ms. Clark, are you going to give us an update on the bonds and juvenile bonds, or are we going to do that later? Is that on the agenda later, or do you want to talk about it now?
It's not actually on the agenda, but we did complete the sale and close of those bonds, saving approximately $1 million per year in debt service. So the bonds were four times oversubscribed, so we were able to push the rates.
Is that the one we did the competitive bid on?
It is not.
It is not.
No, we had Citigroup was the banker under a negotiated bid.
What happened with the Board of Supervisors on number 7 on the proposed changes to the PFAC bylaws?
We have not presented those to the board yet. We're now kind of in the budget process, so we plan on getting it to the board by June.
By June, okay. Mm-hmm. So we're all still unpaid, right?
That is correct.
Okay.
I'll move the minutes if you would like.
We have a motion for approval. We have a second.
Aye.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Why don't we, before we get into the training, do you think it's, let's go to number 3 first so you can give us an update here so we won't probably bore any of the public here if they're here. So, excuse me, you have a training schedule. Do we need approval for that, or are you just advising us on that?
It's just a receive and file. It's just to let you know, and if anyone has anything they'd like to add that maybe I haven't considered or covered, I can obviously change those. My intent with the schedule is to invite some of our banking firms on our qualified panel, as well as our financial advisors and bond counsel, to participate in the training. So I will be sending this out to them and asking them to volunteer to assist in educating us.
Okay, yes, Shari, go ahead.
Yes, thanks, Chair Hammond. I did check the dates on my calendar because I know these are our scheduled dates. There are a few conflicts I have. Again, I don't know if the board is interested in moving any of them. It would be nice also because one of them is like an OSERS meeting that I have that I obviously am also an ex officio on, so it's a little more of a conflict. I know I have a county treasurer's meeting on June 14th. If I could get the backup for that. And then on September 13th, we have an OSER strategic planning meeting. And I will be on vacation on July 12th.
Well,
so there are 3 days that, they probably are some conflicts. And again, I know we used to have some flexibility. And if not, as long as I could get the backup detail, I also want to just thank the staff. This is a great opportunity. I really appreciate them coming forward with this. I think it's going to be very helpful for all of us as we look at these financing issues. Getting the backup on it will be very helpful. So I appreciate staff's time in putting it together, and I look forward to either certainly attending or the ones that I may happen to miss getting the backup for it. Thank you very much.
Don't those dates coincide with the normal scheduled PFAC meetings?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which
yes,
are always fluid exactly. And changing.
So well, we've tried really hard for the last 2 years to keep them on the dates that they are scheduled so that you all have an opportunity to keep them on your calendars.
All right. So are you just advising us of this? Or
yeah, I was okay. Those are just dates that I've looked at my calendar, and I have some conflicts where I'm an ex officio on both committees. So it is, unless there's certainly something like in one case, if I could come back for a couple of hours, but we regularly vote on things at OSER, so it's a little more difficult. But if we have other items that would be votable, I would certainly plan to come back for those here. I would just arrange it, but if it's just the training, it might not be something that I may be able to to come back for.
So you're not suggesting we amend the schedule?
No, I don't think so. I just wanted to let the committee know that there are a few dates that I am not available, and if there was anyone else that was not available on those same dates, this is, I think, our chance to let the staff know, because if three of us are going to be gone on a date, it doesn't make sense. But it sounds like everyone else is here, so I have no problem just receiving the information. Thank you.
Okay, duly noted. Okay. We don't need to approve this, do we, Ms. Clark? This is just okay.
Motion to be received and filed.
Number three item on the agenda is...
A motion to receive and file. Mm-hmm. We need that, yeah.
A motion to receive and file. We need a motion for that?
Yes. Okay. I said I'll move to receive and file.
Okay. Second, I'll second it. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Number three item is the tax and revenue anticipated notes update. For your information, for people who aren't familiar with this, on March 8th, we had a PFAC meeting. It was approved by the Board of Supervisors. And Ms. Clark is going to give us an update about what happened.
Well, actually, what I'm going to give you an update on is that we, as part of the process, we have you, as PFAC, approve the tax and revenue anticipation notes in concept. And then we would start preparing the cash flows and the documentation that's necessary to issue the debt. In the process of preparing the cash flows this year, we determined that we didn't need tax and revenue anticipation notes. We have sufficient cash flows to not issue debt at this time. Now, if the board makes some modifications to the budget and spends money faster than we are proposing, we may ultimately do that. But at this point in time, based on the budget that's been developed and the cash flows, we do not think we will need to issue a tax and revenue anticipation notes.
Well, that's extraordinarily good news, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Good management there.
That's right.
We think so.
Okay. And the juvenile justice bonds, they went out?
They did. They were issued on, I'm trying to remember the date, April 4th or 5th. I can't remember. We closed them on the 25th. And as I indicated earlier, we were able to issue them and save the county, as well as the administrative officer of the courts, approximately $1 million a year in debt service.
Did you go the full $40 million?
It was 30, right around 37, 36.8, I believe, is the number.
Okay. Did the fact that we don't need these trans, does that mean you're going to have to come back for teeter financing?
We do teeter financing every year, and you approved a commercial paper program that effectively rolls every single year. Last year, you did approve the replacement of Dexia with Wells Fargo as the LOC provider. So generally, what we do is just roll the debt each year unless we have a major change to the program. We don't anticipate any at this time.
Okay, you indicated that you were considering doing those simultaneously with the trans or melding them together, but you're not going to do that.
No, it did.
Since there's no trans, since you don't.
Well, it also didn't quite work the way we wanted to. We may make some further modifications to teeter, and we're looking into that right now. But that would occur after the roll, so we'll bring that back to you if it all seems like it works.
Yeah. Did I read that, Shari, that you are like a 96? Did I read this in the paper? You were about 96% collectible. Is that number right? Did I read that in the paper?
Yes, Chair Hammond. I was going to mention that we are probably at the highest collection rates that in the last 6 years, so it will probably reduce overall the amount of the teeter borrowing even less perhaps than last year. We expect to be over 98% for the total year by the time we finish June 30th.
And 3 years ago, it was down as low as 93 or 94%. Am I right about that?
I think it was probably a few more years than that. I don't have it, but yes, yeah. I think it was down lower. Yes.
So people are paying their taxes.
They are paying their taxes timely.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to add, Ms. Clark?
No, I'm fine. Thank you.
Okay. We have a training session verbal. This is about the PFAC overview, the policies, procedures, and the Brown Act information. So who is going to present that? You are?
I'm going to start. We thought we'd see how it would go first and sort of give everybody an overview on Public Financing Advisory Committee. Probably, Mr. Hammond, you've been here longer than me. You can probably tell us about the history of PFAC. You want to turn me on?
Sorry.
I'll go to this. Please. Now, are we good now? Okay, very good.
Thank you.
I was afraid you couldn't hear me. Anyway, what we want to do is kind of give some history for those of you who were not here in the beginning, back in 1996. We'll talk about the responsibilities as they're set forth in the policies and procedures as adopted by the board. Talk about a picture of the county financings in general. I mean, I went back and actually looked at everything we've done since 1995, and it was quite a big picture, more than I had anticipated. And then we'll wrap up with a discussion of the Brown Act by Angie. So get your coffee. Okay, so starting with a little history, why do we have a public financing committee in the first place? The committee was formed as a result, a direct result of the Orange County bankruptcy in 1994. It was a method to slow down the financing process and to ensure that staff and the board had a full understanding of the purpose of the financing being proposed. If some of you may recall that there were financings being done primarily for arbitrage purposes or to earn interest earnings on one side and pay less on the other side, for those of you who don't know what that means. To talk about how it was to be accomplished, specifically what type of revenue would be pledged and how it was to be structured, and then to identify the expected results. The board, in adopting the PFAC, established some guidelines. Basically that this was to be an advisory committee. It would review all public financings of the county and make recommendations to the board. That is still in place today. The PFAC was identified by the county in the bankruptcy plan of adjustment as an organizational and procedural measure implemented to provide greater oversight of the county's finances. And I know one of the questions your member Hughes had asked or indicated was she thought it was a requirement of the plan of adjustment. Both our County Council Angie Daftery and I have looked through all of those documents. It is not a requirement, but it was something that the county implemented on its own. The purpose of PFAC, we do the first or primarily through the engagement of bond counsel and disclosure counsel. So it's to assure all the public financings comply with the applicable federal and state laws. And in order to do that, we do engage bond and disclosure counsel to make sure and advise us that we were on track with all of those things. It's also to provide a system of controls to ensure that the county fulfills all of its legal obligations relative to any public financing. And again, we do rely on our county council, bond and disclosure council, as well as our own knowledge to ensure that we do that. The county is also required, which I know is different than almost every other county, we do what we call due diligence sessions with all of our board members and all of our financial professionals. So that would include Mr. Franz, it would include the CEO, it includes the treasurer, tax collector, and the auditor controller. We sit down with them and we go through every the disclosure document and said, did we miss anything? Do you understand what we're doing? Have we said anything in here that's not true? And that is obviously a direct result. There were things done back in the early 90s that relative to the financings that some of the board members indicated they didn't understand were being done. So we do this just to make sure everybody's on board. The last item is to prevent potential conflicts of interest due to contributions or gifts to elected officials and provide full disclosure if they do exist. PFAC helps to ensure there are no financial team participants selected because of their his or her connections to public officials. And I can talk a little bit about that in a minute, but as part of the RFP process, we basically ask the firms to let us know if they have any conflicts. The PFAC members consist of the five public members that are appointed by the Board of Directors, or Board of Supervisors, one appointed from each board district. And they do not have to live in the district. I think that's been some of the questions that came up before. They serve three-year terms and they're staggered, so some of you would leave the committee prior to others or be reelected or reappointed. And then it also consists of the auditor controller, Jan Grimes in this case, and the treasurer tax collector, which is Sherry Friedenrich. And then there's not one non-voting member, which is the county executive officer, or Bob Franz in his absence. The other requirement is that the chair and the vice chair can only be from the public members. It can't be one of the county officials. Okay, the selection of financing professionals is, as I indicated earlier, it is done through a two-step process. And for those of you who've been here a while, you know what the process is. But basically, once every 4 years, we go out and we do what we call an RFQ, Request for Qualifications process, to banking firms, to underwriters, and financial advisors. We said, submit your qualifications. We establish some baseline criteria, and we put them, we come to USPFAC and ask you to approve them as a qualified panel to be in place for 4 years. And then once that qualified panel is established, they are the only group that gets to participate in upcoming financings. The second step in the process is that we go out for what we call an RFP. And this is for a specific financing. So I'm doing Juvenile Justice Center or Tax and Revenue Anticipation Notes. I will send out an RFP to all these firms and say, we would like you to consider participating. Tell us what you'll charge us. And then all of the items up at the top, the quality of service, availability, and depth of commitment to resources, and so forth, all of these items at the top of that slide will basically be part of the criteria we use to select the firm to ultimately do the transactions. We also ask them to tell us if they've had, within the 2 years of their engagement of the issuance of bonds, if they've provided any political contribution to any of our board members, as well as to the treasurer, tax collector, or auditor, controllers, and this is to ensure that we don't have any conflicts. The two parties,
excuse
in addition,
me.
Yes.
Does that preempt them from making a political contribution?
Yep. Yeah, in most cases, it does. I think most of the banking firms now basically have their own rules in place that they can't provide political contributions to any public officials.
Do we have a policy about that, though?
We don't. We have a policy that they can't do business with us relative to the financing.
If they make political contributions to.
Okay.
I think another item to clarify. I believe that the county gift ban ordinance requires that nothing over $5 can even be accepted. So
correct.
I think that is even more prohibitive. I think under the state's law, you could accept up to $350 and disclose it. I think it's up to $50. But I think the county, is that correct, that the county gift ban ordinance is only $5?
That is right. You can't receive any gift from anyone who's doing business with the county or anticipates doing business with the county within 12 months of when a gift is given.
And that doesn't apply to just elected officials. It applies to people like me.
Designated employees who must complete Form 700 forms.
Would that apply to the PFAC board? No, because there wouldn't be any.
You have gift contribution. You have to comply with the same gift procedures as well.
Uh-huh. In terms of receiving.
Yes. Okay, we're on number 9 now. And we're talking about the two parties that, in addition to PFAC, that have a role in the financing process. And first of all, it would be staff. And our job is to perform an initial analysis of the requested or proposed financing. And keep in mind, we don't generally generate all of the financings. That people will come to us, other departments in the county, the airport, or waste and recycling. We will have a developer approach us, saying they want to form a community facilities district. Could have a developer come to us for a housing project. I know that's your favorite. And then we have to analyze what they bring us and determine if it's something we should bring forward to PFAC. So we do the initial analysis. We also send out the RFPs to the firms so that when we come to you and say we'd like to do this in concept, we have the firms in place that would be doing the work. We have an estimate of the cost that it would take and basically what the big picture structure would be. We provide that to you in a written report, and then we request that you approve the financing in concept so that we can take it forward to the Board of Supervisors. The next step in the process is that
can I just ask one question? Now, if it was anything that's a general obligation, that would actually also have to go to the vote of the people?
Yes, a general obligation bond has to go to the vote of the
right,
people.
Right, so these would be ones that would be capital or specifically revenue?
Lease revenue bonds, bonds that are issued for the airport, for example.
Right.
Refunding CFDs, assessment districts, those types of bonds.
But not general obligation bonds, which have that additional step, which have to go to the vote of the people. And
correct.
Then at that point, I assume it would go through the same process here. It would just be slightly different because you'd have the vote.
You'd have to have a vote.
Okay,
first, yes.
Great. Thank you.
And we never seem to get school bonds. Are they exempted from PFAC or?
Yes, they are.
They're specifically exempted from the PFAC policies and procedures.
And because that's a local school district issue, or is that the reason?
That's right. It's really on their credit that the bonds are issued. It's not related to the credit of the county. We just are a conduit. We just, the statutes provide that we must issue some bonds on their behalf. And so we're just really a conduit for it, and it's not based on the county's credit.
So it never comes to PFAC?
That's
even
right.
Even though we facilitate the issuance of the bonds?
That's right.
Okay. On item number 10, basically, once we get the approval in concept, we perform the final analysis, and that's the development of the documents, the establishment of the securities, the terms and conditions of whatever contracts need to be developed, insurance policies, whatever needs to be done. We put all of that together as staff, and then we present that to PFAC in its final form for consideration with an upper limit of interest rate. So if we're going out, say, for trans, we'll say we want a maximum interest rate of 2 or 3% in this market. In other cases, it would have been substantially higher. And then we will request that US PFAC approve the proposed financings, which includes the documents, the fees, and the interest rates. And then we take that item then to the Board of Supervisors, which under the bylaws under the procedures has to be, your comments have to be presented to the board 5 days prior to their deliberations on the process. Your responsibility.
And just a quick question, if I might, through the chair. On that, if for some reason PFAC were to turn something down or vote against something, would it still go to the board, and it would just be provided what those votes were, and it would be provided with any input? Mm-hmm. So we're just an advisory. We aren't a...
You're not an approving body.
Right.
You're an advisory body, yes.
So it could still go through. Thank you.
Yeah. Now, we've had some controversy about that point in the past, and I think the last time we were here, Richard Mendoza, we brought that up, and the question is that if we turn down by majority vote an issue, that has no bearing on the supervisors. They can do what they want to do. Is that correct?
They can. I do cover that in a couple slides further, but that's okay. But yes, they could essentially say, well, thank you for your input and vote on it anyway. I haven't seen them do that since I've been here. I don't know if they've done it since you've been here. So,
well, sort of.
Okay. So, what the PFAC's job is to, as we indicated earlier, select the financing professionals from the board approved and your approved list. That's after the RFP process, and then consider each of the proposed financing, including all the fees. At that point in time, as I indicated, we would also have the price proposals from each of the firms, and then direct that the PFAC recommendations in concept be presented to the board for their consideration. And then we finally, this is still in the concept process, we would take that to the Board of Supervisors, and then they can either approve or reject the financing in concept. They can ratify or disapprove the selection of the financing professionals, so they can accept or disapprove of the financing professionals by majority vote. If they are disapproving any one of those two items, they would have to submit it back to PFAC to make an alternative recommendation. So you could say, we like this process, we like these firms, go forward, and the board would say, no, we really don't like this group of firms, send it back to you, and you have to reselect. Now, the one I think you're talking about, Mr. Hammond, is the one that was, I think, amended in, might have been 2006, that if they want to amend, modify, or rescind any of the PFAC recommended items, so say you like the, you had an underwriter, a banker, and a financial advisor, and they didn't like the underwriter, they wanted a different underwriter. They could pick out that underwriter and by 4/5 vote amend that to a different underwriter. So that's the one item I think you're discussing.
What if they don't like the deal?
They can always reject a deal by majority vote.
Yeah, in other words, does it need needs 4/5?
No, they can just reject the whole thing. I mean, obviously, it wouldn't matter who the financing professionals were.
But they're
were
not obligated by our negative recommendation.
No, they aren't.
Okay.
So you could reject it and they could accept it.
Right.
It's a little awkward, but... the last step in the process for the Board of Supervisors is that they would get the final report, which comes to you first, obviously. that'll talk about the purpose of the financing, a description of the structure and security, that whether it's fixed rate or variable rate, short-term, long-term, the source of revenue to pay the debt. Is it lease revenue bonds? Is it airport revenues? Whatever. A description of how the debt proceeds will be invested. A statement of the due diligence that has been completed, and a copy of the proposed official statement and any of the other financing documents. In addition to that, again, we have to let the board know what PFAC decided on this item and any issues that were raised at that time. And then last,
just one clarification on 13. It says the board shall consider the documentation may approve by majority vote or may amend and modify by a 4/5 vote.
Right.
I'm not sure I follow that.
That's the same issues again. They can pick and choose pieces out of it. At this point in time, at the final vote, I think it would be much more difficult. But say, for example, you approve the entire package of financing documents and you said up to a maximum of 4% interest. And they said, well, gee, we think you can go all the way to 7. They could by 4/5 vote change that. And we change the documents.
All right.
So I think it's more of a pick and choose thing. Angie and I had this conversation a couple of days ago. We were trying to figure out how this was different than majority.
So there's just a higher threshold for the board when they want to pinpoint one particular aspect of the financing as opposed to the entire financing that could be done by a majority vote.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Chair Hammond, I have just one.
Sure.
One of the things that, and I appreciate this, is very helpful because it gives the purpose. If I go back to page 5, we really have, I think, 4 key items that we are required to do. What would help me probably for future financing that are brought to us, if we could, for each of the financing on the fact sheet, identify how we have met each of these. I mean, obviously the one is the bond or disclosure council, making sure that they are there available to be able to say, we are in confirmation. Mm-hmm. The system of controls, I'm not quite sure if there's further backup what that is, if that's the general, but the fact that we perform the due diligence or what date that is set for, if it hasn't been set. And then on the conflict of interest, is that reviewed or how is that reviewed? I wasn't aware, I didn't realize that attorneys couldn't. I know there's very strict banking laws and I don't believe I've taken any, but it certainly would be, with that, it's very important to know that, we haven't accepted anything because mm-hmm. that would conflict you out on something here.
We do ask the firms themselves when they are engaged to do the work, we indicate, you have to certify to us that you haven't given any money to any members of PFAC or the Board of Supervisors within the prior year or prior 2 years, just to make sure that we're forcing them to tell us those things.
Right. So it would be helpful if on that fact sheet, at least for me, and I don't know where the board, but to make sure that every time we know these are our responsibilities and that we have looked at that, because that's what then we would be using when we recommend or vote on that recommendation from staff. Thank you. And
that was, as I read through these again, refreshing your memory on what needs to be done, I thought we need to do a better job of making sure you guys are aware of those things.
Yeah, I think that's very good. So you guys did a great job on pulling this together.
Okay, so the next section, as I indicated earlier, I wanted to kind of go back and see what PFAC has, the purview that PFAC's had over the financings of the county. And doing a quick review, we look back and we see at least $4.6 billion in debt that this committee has approved over the years since 1996 when the committee was established. Those included the tax and revenue anticipation notes, and I said we've done those annually since 2008. It was a long period of time they weren't done because we just didn't need the money. Pension obligation bonds, those are short-term debt. We've done those in 2006, 7, 11, and 12. There are also some done in 1996 and 97 that were defeased, and they were a little bit different structure than we've been using. Commercial paper notes, again, short-term. We've done those annually since 2008. Prior to that, there were bonds in place that we, when the delinquencies increased substantially, we had to change the whole structure of the bond deals. We do lease revenue bonds. Those are similar to what you just approved on the refunding for the Juvenile Justice Center. Those are generally longer term, and they're issued as needed or requested. The bankruptcy obligation bonds are actually lease revenue bonds as well. Refunding bonds, also long term, and those are based on market conditions. Right now, the market's really good for refunding bonds, and we're looking at some other opportunities that we can to save the county and the taxpayers some money. Then we have community facilities district bonds, and those are as requested by the developer. As far as I know, the Rancho Mission Viejo Company will be approaching us sometime this year because they're planning on doing some large developments in South Orange County. And then we have assessment district bonds. Those are also as requested by the developer. Revenue bonds, those are primarily related to the John Wayne Airport, OC Waste and Recycling, so they're generally the county's enterprise funds, and only as they look forward and need those debt, that debt issued. And the reason we see them is because part of the bankruptcy, all county financings come through this department. Then we have the single and multifamily housing bonds. Those are conduit financings, and those are as requested by the developer. And last on here that we've issued before, the tax allocation bonds, you probably won't be ever seeing those again because those are related to the redevelopment agencies and they're based on the revenue that comes from the tax increment. So as you can see, there's a wide range of financings and a significant amount of debt that has been issued under your preview as this committee. In addition to the pure financing, PFAC also does look at the letter of credit providers, similar to what you did last year with Wells Fargo, and Sumitomo, which we just did earlier this year with the assessment district. The training schedule we put in there is primarily to cover these, hopefully in prior to when they will be issued, so that you'll have a good background and understanding of what they are. And then if there's anything that you want me to add to the schedule or something that doesn't make sense to you, we intend to do with these presentations is continue to include them in your book so you'll have a packet of information that discusses each one of these, and anything we need to expand on, we will. And with that, I'm going to let Angie enlighten you about the Brown Act.
Chairman, if I might, just one note on the the types of debt that we've issued. Some of them are like the trans. The state has changed fairly significantly how some of the revenues it sends down in terms of property tax. They've focused a lot more on property tax and have shifted away from vehicle license and sales tax. So I think when you look at some of these that are a lot more prevalent just since the last years, I think part of it is how the financing on the state level has also changed. And I don't know if there's anything else. I don't know, certainly for the public, if they're as familiar with some of those types of revenue shifts. But I think that certainly is one of the reasons. And I know on the pension obligation bonds, there is a discount. And I'm not sure how long OSERS has provided that discount, if it was done. I know CalPERS has been doing it for, a number of years. And I don't know if this was the first year that OSERS did that. But there were certain reasons that some of these came into place, not certainly because the county is looking to go into debt. But it's the way that the revenue is coming in that's made it a little bit more beneficial to issue some short-term debt.
I think we've had those discount bonds most every year, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, the pension obligation bonds, I think, it was 2010, 11, and then 11, 12 were the first times we had done them since it was probably
6 and 7.
Yeah, so I think it depends on the market interest rates.
Yeah.
And OSERS votes each year as to whether or not they will provide the discount up front. So it's a combination of the discount up front and is the market at a point where you can issue the debt and still get enough of a discount for it to make sense.
Yeah, we've done it several times.
Mm-hmm.
Before we move on to the Brown Act, we might have some folks from the public here that might want to ask questions or inquire so far what we've covered. Does anybody in the audience? Yes, sir. Will you stand up and identify yourself, please?
Sure. Bruce Heyman, resident of San Juan Capistrano. The question I have is when, for example, Dana Point Harbor comes before you, what kind of bond will that be? Will that be a revenue bond or?
Right now, I think it's anticipated to be a revenue bond. We haven't looked at the detailed structure, but I do we think there's a way for that to become a revenue bond.
Okay. And then would you, I think the chair mentioned, do we get to vote on whether the plan is good or just the financing?
This committee votes on the financing structure.
Thank you.
I might add just some color to that. The history of this, of PFAC, has been that the staff, I will say, has always done a very good job. Ms. Clark and her predecessor, Tom Beckett, have always done a very good job of preparing the data, and so we've never seemed to have any problem with the data that comes through. There have been, in the past, some, what I think PFAC has considered some controversial situations, and I'll just say that we just recently this year had a housing, affordable housing bond that I, for one, and I kind of drug the committee along with it, it was a terrible real estate deal. And we really gave several reasons to the supervisors why it was a bad deal. And by any economic standard, and I happen to be an appointee of Supervisor Pat Bates, and she called me about this, and we sent it to the board, and with our comments about it, she called me, and we went into a long dissertation about it. Then it went to the Board of Supervisors, and the Board of Supervisors all sort of ran for cover, and they all said, you know, Supervisor Bates, this is in your district, so you go solve this problem. So they backed off. So Pat, or Ms. Supervisor Bates, got in touch with us people in San Clemente, the city manager there, executive manager there, and went round and round, and she came back and concluded that, yeah, it was an awful real estate deal. It cost far too much money for what the benefit was, but the consequences to the city of San Clemente for not doing it were far worse than if they did do it. There were tax set-asides, there were penalties, there were all kinds of other consequences of not meeting the State Affordable Housing Act. So the supervisors approved it, and it went forward. That's probably, of the controversial things we have, it usually takes that kind of a format. They don't ever come back and say, we're going to override PFAC. But they do take, hopefully, I think in most cases, if we have negative comments about deals, they do pay attention to them, and that they respond to them and come back, and they drive Ms. Clark crazy, and so it goes back and forth. So I think it's, PFAC is really not a, we're not a gatekeeper for financing, so we're really more a speed bump. And that's kind of, I think, what the supervisors want at this point.
Hi, Angie Duthrie, Deputy County Counsel. I'm going to give you a brief overview of the Brown Act. You can find it in Government Code Section 54950. The focus of the Brown Act really is that the deliberations of a legislative body be done in the open, and that members of the public have access to the bodies that they create. Now, the Brown Act applies to any legislative body of a local agency, but also to any commission or committee that legislative body creates, and that's why it would apply here to PFAC. It does not apply to ad hoc committees, and what the Act defines is an ad hoc committee that is made solely of the members of the legislative body and that constitutes less than a quorum. Mm-hmm. So what constitutes a meeting under the Brown Act? Well, it's when you have a majority of the members of the legislative body at the same place, at the same time, and the purpose of them congregating together is to hear, discuss, deliberate, or take some kind of action that is within their jurisdiction. Now, what the Brown Act does, it prohibits what's called serial meetings. And what that means is that a majority of the members of a legislative body cannot, outside of a meeting, use a series of communications, either directly or indirectly, through some kind of agent, to discuss or deliberate or take some kind of action that is within their subject matter jurisdiction. And this is true even if through these series of communications, there's not a collective concurrence on what kind of action should be taken on an item. Now, you can have staff briefings. Now, staff can come and brief each and every one of you. However, it's only allowed if the person briefing each member of the legislative body does not give the positions or the thoughts or opinions of the other members of the legislative body. So you can meet individually with one member, but you can't not begin to create some kind of concurrence on what kind of action should be taken on a particular item. Now, there are three types of meetings that you can have under the Brown Act: a regular meeting, a special meeting, and what's called an emergency meeting. A regular meeting, each legislative body is going to provide by either an ordinance or their bylaws the time and place and when those meetings are to be held. And now, if there's a meeting that's held outside of this predetermined regularity or place, a location of meetings, that's what you would call either a special meeting or an emergency meeting. If you're going to have a regular meeting, you have to post the agenda for that meeting 72 hours before the meeting. And there are three situations in which a legislative body is permitted to take action or discuss an item on the agenda that, that was not previously agendized. One is if it's an emergency, and I'll get in the next few slides, I'll talk about what the Act defines as what constitutes an emergency. Also, you can discuss an item that has not been previously agendized when there's a need for immediate action. And the only way you can take advantage of this exception is if it came to the attention of staff or members of the legislative body that you that wasn't that there you cannot wait to another regularly scheduled meeting, but that has to come after the posting of the agenda. So it's not something that you knew prior to the posting. So it has to, it's within that very brief period of time, that 72 hours. And then you can only put it on the agenda by 2/3 vote. Also, if there was an item that was continued from a previous meeting, and that previous meeting happened within 5 days of the meeting in which now you want to consider that item, then there's an exception that you can, if it wasn't agendized in that subsequent meeting. Now, special meetings can be called at any time by the presiding officer, so here would be the chair of PFAC, or by a majority of the members of PFAC. And so there's an exception under the Brown Act in which you can convene, because I started to say, well, how can a majority of the members decide to create to call a meeting if they can't meet outside an agendized meeting? So there is a special provision where you can meet without having to agendize that particular meeting. But again, no actions can be taken. The only thing that really can be taken is a quick vote, like, let's set a special meeting. And then once you set a special meeting, it's a 24 hours agenda notice that must be given. And then to call an emergency meeting is when a majority of the legislative body determines that emergency exists. Now, there are a few things that do not constitute a meeting under the Brown Act, and that is when one or two members of the legislative body want to have a conversation. If you attended, a majority of members of PFAC attended some kind of conference or a meeting that's open to the public, that would be fine. So as long as, maybe not off to the corner, you're discussing issues that relate to the subject matter jurisdiction of PFAC. Also, you can attend purely ceremonial or social events, again, provided that you don't discuss among yourselves the business of PFAC. And also, you can attend a standing committee that's open and noticed, as long as you're only there as observers. Now, talking about what's required for a Brown Act meeting, it has to be open and available to the public. The public must have the right to address you on any matter that's appearing on the agenda, as well as be able to address on any issue that would be within your subject matter jurisdiction. You may also adopt reasonable regulations to give maybe time limits to, and also the number of speakers that may speak on any particular item. You cannot have a sign-in requirement. So members of the public are not required to register, sign name, and they don't even have to give you their name to be able to address you. You can't prohibit the criticism of a member of the public may have regarding policies, procedures, programs, or services of the county. Also, members of the public have the right to record or videotape the meetings, as long as it's not disruptive or obstructive. And also, they're entitled to the documents that are given to the legislative body, and they must be provided upon request. Again,
Maybe through the chair, just a quick question on the public criticism of the policies, procedures, program, or services. What about any type of personal attacks, or as you hear, you talk just about sort of, you know, programs. Is that allowed, or is that not allowed?
Well, I mean, you certainly would want to keep decorum. I mean, you're entitled to keep decorum and mm-hmm. and have some civility in the conduct of meetings. So I think you could respond to that and ask some folks to kind of, I see that at actually the Board of Supervisors meetings, you can curtail that. That would be inappropriate.
Anticipating some rapple?
No, I'm wondering. I didn't see it, and I know that people, a lot of times, at least when I was at the City of Huntington Beach, came up, and I didn't see it here, and I think they have the right to public speech, but there is certainly some civil that you can, the chair or the presiding officer can have.
That exactly right. And again, on the agenda requirement, again, it has to be posted 72 hours before regular meeting, but it also has to be posted in a location that's freely accessible to members of the public. And also, the agenda has to contain a brief description of the items that are to be considered. And again, you can't take any actions that's not appearing on the agenda, with the exception of those three exceptions I talked about a little earlier ago. Well, when can an item that's not been agendized be discussed or acted upon? Well, you can definitely respond to statements made or questions posed by members of the public. You can ask questions for clarifications or make a brief announcement or make a brief report on your own activities. You can also provide some kind of reference to staff or request that staff bring some information back to you at a subsequent meeting. And you can also take action to direct staff to place something on a future agenda. Mm-hmm. And in regards to enforcement and penalties, there is criminal penalties when a member of the legislative body purposely intends to keep information from the public, and that would be a misdemeanor if they're found guilty. Also, the district attorney or any interested party can commence an action to get an injunction to prevent violations of the Brown Act. A court may also invalidate an action that was taken in violation of the Brown Act, and a plaintiff that prevails could obtain their attorney fees and costs. So that's it in terms of my presentation. I'm available to answer any questions.
I have one question, just to review. What constitutes a meeting? In other words, the PFAC has five public members and three additional members, which is eight. So that means that three of us can meet and talk about something. Have I got that example correct?
Yes, because you're less than a majority. However, it's, the issue with the voting members, but because there's some members that don't vote. So total.
It's only one that doesn't vote.
Only seven.
All right, so we could have three of us could meet and talk, and we're not in violation.
That's
but
right.
Four would be violation.
Then, you're in the Brown Act world,
Okay. Any other questions about the Brown Act?
I had one question, sure. Angie. Excuse me. I remember during the 1994 bankruptcy, there was a problem that the board could not meet couldn't meet because of the 24-hour requirement for a notice of a meeting. And I believe that's been changed in the Brown Act. So under emergency situations, you could meet.
Right, and an emergency situation is when you have some kind of work stoppage or some kind of crippling event. It has to be a natural disaster as well would constitute an emergency.
So there is now a provision in the Brown Act that you could meet without the 24-hour requirement.
Well, that, again, you'd have to make a finding that an emergency exists, and I think a imploding bankruptcy would probably fall right into that. And so the body could get together, make a finding that they believe an emergency exists and the facts surrounding that.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay, any other comments from the committee about this or questions? Any questions or comments from the public that they'd like to ask or inquire?
How is it called the Sunshine Law? It doesn't seem like a ray of sunshine.
Angie, here's a question to you.
I thought it was a rhetorical question. I take it that definition to mean openness, sunshine, full transparency in the workings of government.
Not just giving it a happy name.
No.
The sunshine and lollipop law.
Spotlight.
Angie, in your knowledge of this, has this act been, how long has it been in effect?
Was trying to look that up right before coming, but I would say in the 70s.
Before I started working, I've been here a long time.
Long time.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's over 20 years.
Yeah, at least.
Does it work? Is it effective, do you think?
Yes, I think so.
And I think the members of the public appreciate the opportunity to be able to address public bodies, you know. So I think there's a good policy reasons for it.
Okay. Ms. Clark, do you have anything else you want to add to this meeting?
I just wanted to indicate that you can either leave your books here, and we will update them for you and take care of them. And with your notes on them, we'll put your name on them. I can have Diane send you, or you can request that she send the information to you in electronic form so you can keep a computer file. We just want to make sure that you have access to it, and each one of the presentations as they come forward, we'll make sure that you have access to those documents in both electronic and physical form.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Mr. Franz, you have anything you want to add here?
Nothing today.
All right. No other comments from the public. This meeting is adjourned.